In this primer episode, we take a bit of a dive into our guest background, giving you a sneak peek into their origin story, as well as the challenges that they've faced and the things that drive them. If you enjoy what you hear, don't forget to listen to our main episode, which drops every Friday. And please do remember to like, subscribe, and rate us, as it really helps with our discoverability. Hello and welcome to this episode of the Nothing Venture Primer with me, Arish Shah. Today, I am really excited to have with me in the studio, Matt Johns. Matt is the founder and CEO of Founder and Lightning, a company that invests in and builds tech companies with non-technical founders. They partner with ambitious non-technical founders and equip them with the tools, team, expertise, and scale to build highly successful technology companies. Matt, great to have you in the studio with
me. Thank you. Thank you.
Welcome.
For having me.
Amazing. Let's dive straight in. So what was your first job?
My first job, I was 12 years old, worked in my dad's, my family business, which was a music shop. I think it might be illegal now to do that. I'm not sure. I don't know what the rules are. But my mom told me a story the other day that actually he wanted to get me in there even earlier because the news agents around the corner had their like 5-year-old in there. And she apparently said no, it needs to be like 12, that was the minimum. So yeah, that was my first job. Used to do that on a Saturday morning,
yeah,
then go to football in the afternoon, and do like sort of Tuesdays after school, and that was it. I think briefly was a receptionist at a tennis club,
yeah,
and that's it though. Except for that, I've sort of never done a CV.
Okay,
never really had a proper job.
Okay, well that's probably not a bad thing. Family businesses tend to do that to you. I think I'm in a similar boat.
Yeah.
So it sounds like you weren't doing anything before you got into the tech and venture ecosystem. Is that right?
So I took over that business actually when I was young.
Okay.
So I dropped out of university, took that business over at a point when it wasn't really doing very well.
Mm.
My dad had passed away when I was sort of 16.
Sorry to hear that.
So I took that over when I was, I guess, 18, 19.
Okay.
And essentially digitized it. So I took it from an offline business into an online business.
And it was what? It was a record store?
It was like a musical instruments.
Oh, okay. Yeah.
Musical instruments. So we supplied musical instruments to councils.
Okay.
So we're in Barnet. Are we in Barnet now?
Yeah, we're in Barnet.
Barnet was one of our customers.
Okay.
I remember very clearly. Barnet Music Service. It was really tough. It was really, really tough industry. The margins weren't very good. It was a very archaic industry. But I learned loads.
Well, those are the best industries to learn from, right? Because you figure out what doesn't work and then try and sort out what
and
might instead.
Cash was really important, so keeping cash really, really tight. But essentially sort of moved that, changed, rebranded it, moved it from essentially, you know, like an offline business, built a website, did all that kind of stuff. And I was a non-technical founder, if that's the expression, you know, someone that didn't code. So basically learned how to do all that stuff from scratch, not actually code, using partners, using agencies, using freelancers, all that kind of stuff. And that's really what kind of got me into this tech world.
Yeah. So that obviously triggered your move to build Founder Plus, Founder and Lightning.
Correct. So I got out of that business in sort of, you know, about 5-6 years later, and people were coming up to me in my network and saying, oh, I've seen that you've digitized that business. Can you help me? I've got a startup idea. I've got, you know, I've got an existing business I want to digitize, all that kind of stuff. So it's kind of a bit by accident, really. I had some ideas for some tech startups, actually had commitment to raise some money for one of them, but didn't quite believe in it enough. So I thought, well, instead of doing that, let's harness some of the infrastructure that we'd built up. So, you know, I'd used web developers, I built stuff. So I'd had like a team that I could call on from India. And we did that instead. So yeah, it was a little bit by accident. And I never really wanted to build like a big agency, although we kind of are now.
Yeah.
Like 100 odd people with all the infrastructure that goes with that. But kind of as we went, didn't mind because we're always taking equity in all of the companies that we're working with. So a little bit like a VC, a little bit like a agency, a little bit like an accelerator, sort of this hybrid between all of them.
I know the pains and the potential for that sort of a model. In fact, like, we found it's actually really difficult to convince people to give us equity for services. So I will be picking your brains about how that works down the track. So what would you be doing if you weren't supporting founders in this way?
I guess I would probably have a tech startup. Or what I'm really interested in, and part of our thesis is to digitize existing businesses.
Yeah.
So a company that's, you know, already going, that's got revenues, has got customers. Because the hardest thing when you're building a tech company, as you'll know, is getting to product market fit.
Yep.
You know, so I've been doing this for almost a decade now. So unfortunately, I've seen a lot of failures as well as wins. And there's kind of like the key tenets that often link them all together, the reasons why they fail.
Mm.
And yeah, getting to revenue is really, really hard, obviously.
Yeah.
So I'm really interested in how can you digitize existing businesses, because there's so much opportunity. So probably if I wasn't doing this, I'd be doing that.
Okay.
I'd buy a, you know, buy an existing business and digitize it. And that's probably something that we'd like to do in the future as well.
Yeah. Another thing that I probably need to talk to you about as well. So let's talk about Founder Enlightening specifically. So what sort of founders should work with you? What sort of stages do you work at? What sectors, what geographies, how does it work, I guess?
So we are extremely sector agnostic. Like we really don't care what we go into, because the type of founders that we target are domain experts.
Yeah.
So they have the domain expertise. They know their industry inside out. And then we help them with the tech and we help them with the product. We're very set on B2B. So we prefer to do B2B over B2C for a few reasons, mainly that it's less risky.
Mm.
It's easier for the founder to sell.
Mm-hmm.
There's less issues with loyalty and scale, and it's easier to raise money. So typically, we would work with a founder that doesn't code,
because mm-hmm.
That's what we bring. We bring the tech, we bring the product. We have sometimes worked with founders that have a CTO, and they're just looking, they're still looking for the product and the wider tech support. But in general, where it works best is when the founder is a domain expert. They have either started a business before, or they're quite clearly very capable of running a business.
Mm.
We don't want to hold hand too much, because otherwise we may as well just do it ourselves.
Yeah. Which presumably, like, I mean, if one were to be slightly Machiavellian, you could absolutely poach ideas if that were in your interest, right?
If that's what we wanted to do, but
we've a bit unethical.
Well, it's not just that. You know, we don't have any interest in operating.
Yeah, got it.
The companies,
sure.
Like, we want to work with founders and guide them and help them. And essentially, yeah, we fit into that skills gap that they don't necessarily have.
Mm.
And so even some of the founders we work with have started businesses before. They've even maybe exited businesses before, but typically it would be their first tech company.
Yep.
And essentially, our job is to, you know, make sure that they don't make the typical mistakes that founders make.
That I've made,
That I made, you know. A lot of the stuff that we do now is based on the fact that I made a ton of mistakes in those first 4 or 5 years of trying to digitize my first business. And, you know, you look back at it now and it's like, well, obviously that wasn't going to work.
Yeah.
But, you know, very, very smart people can make those mistakes.
Yeah.
So our job is to help them and guide them and push them in the right direction.
Yeah, we're going to talk about that when we get to the main podcast for sure. One question, I guess, within that, are you looking for venture scale style businesses or are you interested in kind of, like, so you talk about, you know, digitizing existing businesses or business models, right? Like, would you look at businesses that are more or less lifestyle or might grow to 10 or 15 or $20 million, or are you looking for venture scalable?
So we're getting in typically at a sub 2 million valuation.
Mm-hmm.
So if those companies exit for 20, we're very happy.
You're happy.
The founder's very happy.
Yeah.
I think there's a big issue with certain VCs pushing founders to scale too hard, too mm-hmm. fast, mm-hmm. and not really being bothered whether it works out for the founder or not. So we are we're not looking for unicorns, and we don't want moonshots to save the rest of the portfolio.
Yeah.
You know, we work extremely closely with these founders on a day-to-day basis, and we would much rather have exits that are sub 100 million
mm-hmm.
but have more of them
mm-hmm.
than the other way around. Now, it's not to say that we certainly wouldn't argue if one came along, but we're not relying on them. Our model doesn't rely on them.
You're not looking for the outliers only.
We're not.
You want to build a base of, like, strong, profitable, valuable businesses.
And I think, you know, there's this misconception for founders that VC is the only way to go. And actually, you know, a lot of our portfolio companies have now raised VC money. You know, so it's not like we want to get them venture backable, but then we guide them to maybe, you know, work with a VC that's not looking for 100x return.
Yeah.
You know,
there are not many of those, but yeah.
But they do exist. They do exist.
Yeah.
So yeah, you know, if the founder sells for 20 million, they don't have to work again.
Yeah.
You know,
100%.
And what we found, and I don't have huge amounts of data for this, but this is, you know, fairly anecdotal, but I think it's not, it's hard, of course it is, but I think it's easier to get to a 20 million than it is to go and sell for 100 million pound plus. And it sounds obvious, but why not do it then?
Yeah, well, I think, I wrote about this a little bit earlier today, I think, but the reality is I think we all get caught up in the, you know, in the veneer of success that, you know, is shown to us on LinkedIn and Twitter and TechCrunch and all these things. And I think a lot of founders, especially because a lot of younger founders tend to be slightly naive and slightly kind of, you know, believe themselves to be a bit immortal. They don't quite understand what the journey looks like when you take on venture capital, which is a really tough journey. Like Dan Bowyer from mangled his name a little bit, but from Superspeed just wrote about this again this weekend. You know, he was really candid. When you take venture money, like, there, you know, if there are five things in your life, choose three of them, because you're not going to be able to do all five, sort of thing.
I just think there's this massive opportunity for people not to chase that.
Yeah, you know? I agree.
And if you look at most of the exits in this country, then they're in the tens of millions.
Yeah. I mean, look, I obviously, speaking to a lot of VCs, there is a lot of, I guess, angst about the fact that, you know, there aren't those massive unicorn style exits. And, you know, part of the reason for that is an inefficiency, as they would see it, in the kind of IPO and the larger market, right? In the private, in the public markets, some of which has now been unlocked with the pension reform, with the ability for pension funds to invest. But yeah, look, I mean, I think there are, you know, there is this question here in the UK and Europe is like, why aren't there more unicorns, and how do we grow that? But equally, and I think this is as valid and invaluable as anything else, because of the way venture works, where, you know, 90% of businesses are likely to fail within the first 5 years. If those 90% of businesses that failed instead were not chasing unicorn valuations, but were going for, like, you know, significant but manageable growth and value, maybe we would see, you know, more employment, more value creation, and potentially, you know, more growth in the ecosystem.
I think it's very hard to replicate the ecosystem that, say, America has.
Yeah. We're 20 years behind, I think, is the other. Well, even 30 or 40 years
more.
Behind. Yeah.
Do we want to replicate it?
Yeah.
You know, I don't know.
Yeah. might be a question you want to take up with Rishi and Jeremy, I think, in that case. Just before we close off the primer, if there were three ventures that you're excited about, either inside or outside the portfolio you have, what would they be?
So I'm not accused of being biased on our, because we've got 35, I think, 36
sure.
now.
Sure.
So I'll talk about our two most recent investments. So there's a company called Cake Drop. Mm-hmm. And this is, I think, a real show of how we maybe invest in things that are slightly quirky or slightly different to the typical VC. So it's a corporate gifting company.
Yep.
So they actually own a bakery.
Nice.
So they provide, you know, cakes and treats and stuff customized for corporates.
Yep.
So when we invested, they you know, we did all of it on spreadsheets, a WordPress website, and have done really well to get where they've got to. And now our job is to turn them into a tech-enabled company.
Yeah.
So not necessarily a pure tech company, but tech-enabled.
Yeah, make the processes replicable. Yeah.
And this is where the opportunity is with these types of companies. It's not just on the front end. It's not just what the customer sees, although, of course, that's important. It's behind the scenes. Mm. You know, how can you automate things so that they can hire less staff or not have to hire as many in the future? How can they improve their gross margins? So we like to do some of the boring stuff that maybe people don't really often consider a tech company, because it's not necessarily what the customer sees.
Sure.
Another recent one, a company called Oya, Oya Kitchens. They are a marketplace for dark kitchens and spare capacity in pubs. And they basically connect food brands. And yet again, they're sort of building all the admin, all the administration for those companies. So solving like a real need. We're really excited about those two. They're our two most recent. And then I'll talk about one of our oldest investments that now at Series A, and that's one of the companies that has now raised VC funding. Mm. And yet again, our thesis is all around trying to do like one thing really, really well. Mm. So all it does quarterly business reviews. That's it. It's a tool that does quarterly business reviews.
What's the name of the business?
It's called ClientShare. Okay. So they've now raised Series A funding. James, the founder, non-technical, extremely commercial, which is a big part of what we look for.
Yep.
So if a founder is, you know, non-technical, I'm trying to move a different word away from non-technical, so I actually think it's a bit too negative.
Sure.
But essentially, founders that don't code.
Don't code, yeah.
You know, what they need to be good at selling, right?
Yeah, because I'd consider myself technical, I can code up to a level,
right.
But I couldn't write a software program. Like, yeah. I can write a little bit of Python code.
Maybe understand.
Exactly. Yeah.
Yeah, which I think it's important to try and understand the process. But yeah, they just do one thing really, really well.
Mm-hmm.
They're doing really well. I think they're in something like 30-40% of the FTSE 100 companies now. So it just shows, you know, I'm sure we'll talk about this later on, but you know, one of the mistakes that founders make is just trying to do too much.
Yeah,
and actually,
always.
If you just skinny it down and just do one thing really, really well, you've got a much higher chance of success.
Yeah, I mean, it's one of the biggest pieces of advice I give to founders when I look at a pitch deck. It's like, why have you got 13 revenue streams here? Like, there's no way you're doing all of this stuff. Do that one thing that you actually are doing and that you have proof points around, and don't worry about the rest of it for today.
Totally.
Matt, awesome. I'm really looking forward to getting into some of the detail in the main episode, but thank you so much for joining me.
Pleasure.